Hey, this is Ari. Welcome back to the Energy Blueprint Podcast. With me in today's show is Julie Olson, who is a triple board certified functional medicine nutritionist who has a specialization in combating hair loss for both men and women. And she gets into a lot of the root cause drivers of this. And she shows some remarkable success stories of people who were able to reverse balding or bald spots or hair loss or hair thinning as a result of very interesting and novel methods, like, for example, improving gut health as just one example. But she goes over a number of other layers to the story here, including how the microbiome relates to this, how mitochondrial health relates to hair loss, and how, for example, the follicles are very, very energetically demanding cells to produce those hair follicles, and therefore how that ties into mitochondrial health and a number of other interesting layers. So if you're interested in hair loss and how to prevent it or combat it, I highly recommend listening to this episode. And also, she's got a free summit coming up, which she mentions at the end of this episode. And she's featuring a lot of world renowned experts in this topic on a number of different aspects related to hair loss. So I recommend checking that out as well. And with no further ado, enjoy this podcast talking all about hair loss with Julie Olson. Julie, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here.
So I want to talk to you about something that is rarely talked about, and it's a little bit taboo to talk about. Because it's kind of embarrassing for a lot of people, and it's a topic that's super common, but not enough people are talking about it, and that is hair loss, and taking, you know, kind of doing something about hair loss beyond just the medication transplant approach. Like, what's actually going on that's driving this? So, I know that there's a lot of nuances, a lot of complexities to this. There's, you know, everything from autoimmune conditions and chemotherapy side effects that can drive hair loss to male pattern baldness and hormonal things. And there's several different competing theories. So you give our listeners the kind of broad overview of landscape of alopecia, of hair loss.
Okay. Well, first, as you said, it is tough to talk about. They put it in the same category as religion and politics, especially for women. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult for women to talk about it. They're shunned. And even the American Hair Loss Association has finally putting an initiative out there so that women will not be dismissed. I mean, that's exactly what happened to me when I lost, you know, so much hair. When I went from practitioner, you know, doctor to doctor, and I was just dismissed. So they are recognizing that. And that leads us into the fact that there's over 50 causes of hair loss, but I put them into four functional categories. And that's stress-induced, inflammatory, digestive, and hormonal. But I'm also really excited about this conversation because I know you deal with energy, and they call the scalp hair follicles the forgotten organ because it has the third highest cellular turnover in the body. Some resources say it has the highest turnover in the body. So, of course, it requires a ton of energy. It requires those nutrients to be absorbed. And our mitochondria needs to be up to par because when we take in nutrients, it's going to go to our vital organs first. I mean, hair loss is not an illness. It's not a disease per se, but it has a huge psychological effect on anyone, especially women.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's our crown of glory.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So what is going on physiologically in most cases of hair loss in women, and how does that differ from men? Is it more genetic driven in men and more lifestyle, nutrition, metabolic health, mitochondrial health driven in women, or is that an oversimplification?
You're exactly right. Exactly what you just said. But basically, hair growth has three main phases, hair growth cycle. It's the antigen, which is the growth phase, the catagen, which is the transition phase, and the telogen, which is the resting phase. And each hair follicle goes through these phases independently. Unfortunately, when we're stressed out, it prematurely goes into the telogen phase. So it rests before eventually shedding to make more, you know, it's supposed to go there to rest, to shed more hair, to make room for new. But when people are constantly in the fight or flight, or they have that elevated cortisol, it disrupts this normal hair growth cycle. Like I said, it puts it into that telogen phase prematurely. So for instance, there's a hair loss called telogen effluvium. That's a stress-induced hair loss. And that's what they're calling the COVID shed, is a stress-induced hair loss. They're calling it actually the chronic telogen effluvium.
So COVID shed is people losing hair in tandem with getting infected with COVID?
Yes. And 66% of the people post-COVID who were infected with it are losing their hair. They're shedding their hair.
In large amounts. And so it's like, are people going bald from this, or they're noticing slightly accelerated hair loss?
They're losing about 50%. It's pretty dramatic. I can't, on average.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're going bald. And the thing with chronic telogen effluvium type of hair loss in general, it is stress induced, so you can grow it back. Whereas other types of hair loss, especially some of the hormonal types of hair loss, if it comes to the scarring of the hair follicle, it's almost impossible to reverse.
The scarring of the hair follicle.
So what happens
driven
is
by what?
It's driven by, well, let me go through some of the phases, especially okay. For cortisol. So it can disrupt the hormonal balance by cortisol. Okay, I can't even talk today. Can interfere with the balance of other hormones involved in hair growth, such as antigens and testosterone. And this imbalance can lead to the shortening of the antigen phase. And again, pops you prematurely into that telogen phase. And then it also alters blood flow, and high levels of cortisol can affect blood circulation, leading to, you know, narrowing of the blood vessels and reduced nutrients and oxygen supply to the hair follicles, which ends up in inadequate nutrient, which can weaken the hair shaft and result in hair shedding. And then, of course, systemic inflammation and the immune response. So chronic stress and cortisol elevation can trigger an inflammatory response in the body. And this inflammation can disrupt the normal function of the hair follicles, causing them to prematurely enter, again, that telogen phase.
Got it.
And it's different for everyone.
Okay, so this can be driven by genetics, which is often the case for men with male pattern baldness, and men like, for example, me, who have, you know, basically all the men in my family, my brother, my father, my uncles on that side, on my dad's side of the family, have all had male pattern baldness from a fairly young age. So there's a very clear genetic pattern to it. I've probably had the least, by far the least, but I still have had some receding hairline since my 20s. Unfortunately. But this process, even in men where it's driven by a genetic predisposition to it, I would imagine is also still heavily influenced, like the rate of how fast you lose your hair is probably still heavily influenced by your overall metabolic health, mitochondrial health. Is that still accurate to say?
It is. And again, that's looking at it through a functional medicine and nutrition lens. And they are coming up with studies day by day. Even alopecia areata, which is what Jada Smith has, they're saying it's an autoimmune condition which attacks the hair follicles. But they don't know the exact cause of that, as they don't know the exact cause of genetic hair loss. I mean, epigenetics can play a role, but your gun's pretty loaded. But back to the alopecia areata, they're saying that stress can potentially trigger or make the condition worse. Mm. And there's other types of hair loss, such as the hair pulling disorder. Have you heard of that one?
I haven't.
It's called trichotillomania.
Mm.
And it's often occurs in response to stress or anxiety. It's really a psychological condition.
I do tend to tug on my hair when I get particularly stressed. So people are actually pull out their hair?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. So for me, I had a distinct period in my 20s where I was particularly stressed. And I remember during this period, like I was probably 25 or 26 years old. I remember seeing clumps of hair falling out in the shower. And when I would comb my hair, when I would brush my hair, I would see tons of hair coming out, super unusual. And it was absolutely, you know, in simultaneous to the most stressful period of my life. And there was no doubt, you know, even not knowing anything about the science of hair loss, I was like, okay, this stress is clearly causing my hair to fall out at a rapid pace. So what's going on there? The cortisol is interacting with the follicles themselves in a way that puts them more in the telogen phase?
Right. It puts them in there prematurely, and it also damages the hair follicles. So you have that rapid shedding.
Hmm. Got it. Okay. And then you mentioned inflammation, digestive issues,
mm-hmm.
and hormonal issues. And all of these are to some extent, I mean, to separate them out is a little artificial and to some degree, I think it's useful, but to help understand, but obviously stress is related to inflammation, related to digestive function, related to hormones, and hormones obviously influence many of these other parameters and so on. There's a lot of overlap and interweaving of these different factors. But how would you say that inflammation is driving this process?
It's the same mechanism, because systemic inflammation, like you said, is usually caused by stress or the fact that you're not absorbing your nutrients or your hormones are out of balance. And systemic inflammation does the same thing. It pops your hair follicles prematurely into the telogen phase, and it also can damage the hair follicles.
Hmm. Got it. And then what are the most important hormones that one should be aware of when it comes to hair loss?
The thyroid's a big one. And even the parathyroid. People mm-hmm. don't realize that. The parathyroid has a lot to do with and testosterone, obviously. And then DHT, dihydrotestosterone. And that is commonly why men also lose their hair, is because that gets elevated. Unfortunately, the medications for that, I mean, we don't have to go down that road, but like finasteride, a lot of men get on that because it can stop that DHT from elevating so much. And even women sometimes get on it. But there's a lot of studies showing that it really messes up men's libido. They can't even get an erection anymore. And even after they stop it, they still are having these sexual problems. So I think the whole purpose of this conversation is for people to look at their whole body and the different systems to try to get things into balance before trying to do something more radical. And can I show some images of some before and after pictures of, I could start with this fellow that had H. pylori and it got cleared up. He was losing his hair and then it,
yeah, please.
This fellow went on a gluten-free diet. So here you can see the progression.
So just explain verbally what we're looking at here for people who are listening rather than watching the video.
We all have H. pylori, but when it's elevated, it can cause so that you don't have the ability to digest and absorb your nutrients very well. And we have images of this fellow had an alopecia bald spot quite significantly, and he couldn't grow a beard. And it shows him before when he had full on H. pylori. And after he got rid of his H. pylori, he grew a full head of hair. I mean, that's a nice full head of hair.
Yeah.
And was able to grow a beard.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So gut health matters. Can I show you another image?
Please.
This is a 20-year-old. It's in a PubMed study. Here it is. Here's a resource. So he had C. diff, and he took what's called a fecal microbial transplant, which is fecal matter from a healthy person. And he not only got rid of his C. diff, but he grew back a full head of hair. And he had alopecia universalis. That means he lost hair not only on his head, but his entire body.
Wow.
So
this is autoimmune, they're saying. This is driven by an autoimmune process. So even if it's driven by an autoimmune process, you can essentially reverse this. So, you know, the idea, the paradigm, I don't know how accurate it is or how accurate you think it is, but the idea is the immune system is now attacking self tissue, and in this case, the hair follicles. And you would think that this is a process that couldn't be reversed, that the immune system has learned to attack its own body's proteins as foreign invaders and wants to destroy them. But even in this case, it's being reversed.
Right. And the same with this gentleman. He's 86 years old. A lot of hair for an 86-year-old man, but he had an alopecia bald spot right here, and he took the fecal transplant and he regrew his hair.
Wow.
And same with this woman who had colitis. So
do you think that this can be extrapolated to say, you know, to see it as a spectrum and say, you know, the health of your microbiome influences the health of hair follicles? Or do you think that this is more isolated in the sense of certain infections of the gut can lead to alopecia? How would you sort of explain the gut hair link?
Well, I explained it I have this published abstract, and I put those studies on here because the reason, and to answer your question, is because I think there is hope for getting your gut healthy for growing back hair, as was demonstrated by these studies. I mean, it's pretty radical. You can't very easily go out and get these fecal transplants, but, you know, leaky gut inflammation, malabsorption really has a whole negative impact, not only on your health, but your hair. And, you know, the inflammation was to degrade, you know, the whole, you know, all about leaky gut. But I mean, I found a ton of resources and references, and I think there's a lot to it, getting your gut healthy to be able to have healthy hair. I mean, like some types of hormonal hair loss and genetic hair losses, that's not the case. But to answer your question, I think I've answered it, but just again, I think the gut, there really is a known association between the gut dysbiosis, inflammation, malabsorption, IBS, hormonal imbalances, and hair loss. I mean, I've got what, 5 references there with different studies. And
going back to stress for a moment, psychological stress, I'm curious, is there any link with post-traumatic stress disorder or past trauma, adverse childhood events, and propensity for hair loss?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. In fact, on my summit, Dr. Ours talked about that. She had childhood trauma. Yeah. There's been studies done on that too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I was exploring this topic recently, maybe a year ago, just to my out of my own interest, for my own selfish interest, due to my own hairline receding since I was in my 20s. The one thing that I stumbled across when I did, when I looked at some research at this time a year ago or so, was there was a link not only with the DHT, the testosterone and DHT conversion pathway, dihydrotestosterone, which has sort of been seen as the key driver in male pattern baldness for a very long time. But there was some emerging research, at least a hypothesis that revolved around blood circulation and the idea of having very tense muscles, like in the forehead and in the scalp, and that relieving some of the, well, I should say that the tense muscles are constricting blood supply to the follicles, and that that might also be a driver of hair loss. And that also kind of, I thought, was interesting, because I've been weight training since I was 13 years old. And one of the things that you do when you're lifting heavy weights is you get like, you know, scrunching your face really intensely. You get a lot of tension in these muscles of the face and the scalp. And it, you know, it seemed like an interesting theory. I'm curious if you know anything about that and if there's any good research to support that in your opinion.
Absolutely. I've run across quite a few studies on that as well. And another reason why there's such practically an epidemic in hair loss is because people are so sedentary and they need those nutrients to their scalp, and they're just sitting around all day. So even just this thing, like it feels really good. It just massages your scalp, but, or doing a down dog or standing on your head or inversion table or something for 3 minutes a day really gets those nutrients up there.
Or just movement, movement, squeezing on the vasculature to pump blood through the system, like getting more circulation.
Right. It's so important. And it makes sense.
Is there any link with toxins? Are there any particular toxins?
With toxins, and let me go through some of the science on that. Before that, can I show you one more picture of this fellow who had celiac disease and went on a gluten-free diet and grew back his hair?
Yeah.
Okay. And here, this is from another study. Look at that. He's a 14-year-old. He lost all his hair, celiac disease. That was part of my problem. Mm-hmm. And then he went on a gluten-free diet for 1 year and grew it back.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, it goes back to the gut. Get the gut healthy.
I wish growing back my youthful head of hair was as simple as going gluten-free.
I know, but it's different for everyone. And as far as toxins and heavy metals and so forth, what they do is they disrupt cell proliferation and different, you know, the biotoxins and heavy metals interfere with normal process of the cell different. I can't even talk today. I guess I'm a little nervous. but they're really, what happens is that it disrupts the signaling pathways involved in these processes, and it impairs the hair follicles from even formulating and inhibits their growth. And then the oxidative stress from, you know, heavy toxins, biotoxins like mold. So the oxidative stress, can cause an imbalance between the production of the ROS and antioxidant defenses, and can damage the cells, including the cells of the hair follicles. And then, of course, systemic inflammation and immune response. So the heavy metals can trigger an inflammatory response, and that can disrupt growth factors, cytokines, immune cells involved in hair follicles, cycling and regeneration. And then they disrupt the hormonal balance, and they damage the hair follicles, the protein synthesis, and can inhibit hair growth. I mean, it's a huge negative cycle.
I think in recent years, we're learning more and more about the microbiome, and, you know, kind of started with the gut microbiome renaissance. And then we sort of learned the gut microbiome is connected to everything else. You know, as you've described, there's even a gut hair follicle, you know, interaction, but a gut lung axis, a gut immune axis, a gut mitochondria axis, a gut brain axis, all kinds of other things going on there. It's connected to basically everything. And we've grown in the last 20 years, especially with our appreciation for the microbiome. In tandem with that, we're discovering all these other microbiomes that exist. The oral microbiome and that field of research is now exploding, and none of that research has yet been integrated into dentistry because so little is even known about the oral microbiome. Then there's research on the skin microbiome, and that's exploding. And I'm curious, you know, obviously this is related to the skin, but it might be a unique environment. Well, actually, let me add one layer to this. We're discovering that microbes exist almost everywhere throughout our body, in the lungs, in the brain, you know, in parts of the body that we thought were sterile. All of a sudden, we're finding out that actually microbes exist there. It seems like I think we're poised to discover in the coming decades that the microbiome is pretty much everywhere, and certainly not just in the gut. But what's going on with the microbiome as it relates to hair loss and hair follicle health?
Well, you're exactly right, because the newly discovered microbiome is the scalp hair follicle microbiome.
Mm. Inside the hair follicle itself.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they've discovered certain probiotics can help with hair growth.
Probiotics taken orally or applied topically?
Orally.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which are those? Is there specific research pointing to specific strains that have been shown to help with prevention of hair loss or regrowth?
Yes. So Lactobacillus planetarium helps with faster hair growth, and because it has these hydroslates,
mm-hmm.
And the Lactobacillus reuteri.
Mm-hmm.
It helps the activity of anti-inflammatory cytokines, which are necessary for hair growth, as well as prevention of hair thinning, and Lactobacillus rhamnosus. It actually helps create some B vitamins and biotin that can help with hair growth and fight against some of the bad bacteria.
Okay, so this mechanism would be more through modulating the gut microbiome and modulating immune function and systemic inflammation and things like that, and how that affects the hair follicles rather than directly acting on the microbiome at the follicle level, correct?
Yeah, sounds like it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's another study published that Lactobacillus parasici promotes hair growth in telogenic mice, a mice module that was published, and promoting mouse hair growth. And that was oral administration.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And so what is known as far as the hair follicle microbiome? Is there a certain type of microbiome that's associated with hair loss versus healthy hair maintenance?
You know, it's just in the infant stages of research, and I couldn't answer that. I really couldn't answer that truthfully. I don't really know.
Got it. Okay, so having said that, there's these different elements that are driving hair loss, whether it's genetic propensity, as in the case often for men with male pattern baldness, stress, which is a huge driver, inflammation, GI issues, whether it's celiac or autoimmune conditions or just poor microbiome health or H. pylori or something like that, and hormonal driven issues, let's say in the case of hypothyroidism or other hormonal issues. So let's say somebody's dealing with this issue. They've got more hair loss than they'd like. They're interested in practical steps to help prevent further loss or to regrow. What would be your approach to doing that? And maybe we'll finish on this, sort of what your sort of system is, or three practical sort of steps that a person should take to address hair loss.
It goes all back to what you're so good at, helping reduce stress and fatigue. I mean, there's even been studies showing that Epstein-Barr virus can affect hair growth. And I mean, just how you teach to increase energy. Like I said at the beginning, we need that energy. And if we're stressed, it's really hard to have enough energy, let alone to function, but to grow our hair is an afterthought. So I would start with that. I mean, I have a quiz to see what type of hair loss you have, but also getting your gut in gear, getting your gut healthy is going to help with your stress. And even sleep. I mean, that's so important because that's when your hair rejuvenates, the hair follicles rejuvenate, just like everything else in our body. If they're not getting that qualitative sleep, it's going to play a role in hair loss. So it's a whole body approach. That's the whole message I'm trying to get across in this summit. And I interviewed about 48 different practitioners. And they all have their specialties, but it all went back to those four main categories that I talked about: the stress, inflammation, the hormones, and digestive. Mm-hmm. So start with managing your stress. Take your class. And the breathing is so interesting, how you teach people how to breathe right. I didn't even understand until I listened to you that the deep breathing that is usually taught is really not that big of a deal. Can you talk about that more?
this interview is about you, not me. So we'll keep it focused on hair loss. But I will certainly be happy to produce more videos on that topic. I have. I've been spending the last 2 months actually writing just the chapter for my upcoming book on breathing science. And there's even a whole bunch of new layers that I've learned in the process of doing this deep dive into the research that I can't find that anybody knows, because, you know, I've looked and looked and looked, you know, and online and in books, and nobody seems to be talking about a whole bunch of these layers that I've found. So So I'm always even evolving my own knowledge in that area.
And also how you speak about coffee consumption, because there's been some studies I ran across where drinking too much coffee can elevate the DHT.
Mm.
And, you know, there's Starbucks on every corner.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's interesting.
On that note, you know, you mentioned the medications that combat DHT and how they can also have the side effect of decreasing libido. There are some compounds that have been shown to have natural anti-DHT conversion activity. I think it's, 5 alpha reductase or something is the enzyme that's involved in testosterone to DHT conversion. But astaxanthin is one of those natural compounds.
Mm-hmm. Saw pimento, pumpkin seed,
right.
And even a cortisol blend, like ashwagandha, any of those adaptogenic herbs really help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, astaxanthin is an interesting one to me because it has so many other proven health benefits and so many other aspects of human physiology, whether it's skin health and protecting from UV damage, whether it's protecting mitochondria from damage, brain health, eye health. So unlike medications that tend to, you know, maybe have one target effect and then have a number of side effects in other systems of the body, something like astaxanthin or other natural interventions, things like exercise, eating a better diet, improving sleep and circadian rhythm, they tend to only have positive side effects. Of course, it's not always the case with, you know, you can overdo anything to the point of negative side effects. But as a generalization, that tends to be true. And I'm curious if you've stumbled across any research on astaxanthin in combating hair loss.
Also, it can act as an antioxidant, and those are so needed for hair loss. But something that I notice is in your supplement, it's not the flushing type, but niacin. People don't realize that the flushing niacin is really great for hair loss because it gets that circulation to the scalp and it has some other factors, but that's one that's missed. I don't see that in a lot of, hair health supplements.
Yeah, actually I have the flushing type and the non-flushing type in there.
Oh, you do? Okay. I missed that.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, it's a really great mix.
But unfortunately I keep the dose of the flushing type fairly low. It's like right on the cusp of the dose that will cause flushing, because many people, unless they're taking a pure niacin supplement, they're not psychologically prepared to experience the flushing. And many people will interpret it as a negative effect. And maybe they'll panic and think that something's wrong, or they're having an allergic reaction to it or something. They don't realize it's just niacin changing blood flow, basically. Okay. So you think that's beneficial for hair loss?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
In promoting circulation to those tissues. So mm-hmm. is that something that mm-hmm. you would recommend to people that are dealing with hair loss, is to use flushing doses of niacin?
Yep. Yep, definitely. And also helps take away the buildup of calcium and DHT that can otherwise inhibit hair growth.
It's taking niacin it away through a chemical interaction or just physically by promoting circulation to the area?
Because it dilates the capillaries and also can help take away that buildup.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other final strategy that you want to leave people with, or you know, maybe even mention certain tests that someone might want to get to check if, you know, check hormone status or check other biomarkers that could be related to this?
Sure. Well, I'd say there's some top nutrients, you know, the fat soluble nutrients, B vitamins, iron, you don't want to get too much or too little, zinc, even manganese and selenium, but protein. And unfortunately, some people might not like this, but you need the animal protein because it has the branched chain amino acids that are so necessary for hair growth. And you need a good protein throughout the day. Our hair is made mostly of protein. As far as tests, I would say get some good functional labs, a stool test, organic acids test, maybe some, see how your nutrients are, like a NutriVal. But also doing some blood work, doing a whole thyroid panel, a whole iron panel with the saturation. And looking at those labs through a functional lens, and those ranges are a lot smaller and more optimal. But even getting just, you know, a CMP and looking at those, because you can see trends, getting your vitamin D tested. Vitamin D is really important for hair. It can really stunt your hair growth if you don't have optimal levels, like between 50 and 80. But again, Ari, it all goes back to stress. I mean, you can be eating well and you can be taking supplements, but if you're stressed and you're not absorbing them, what's the point?
So having some kind of system, some kind of method that you're practicing on a daily basis to combat stress, whether it's breathing practices or mindfulness, meditation, yoga, journaling, something is, you think, essential for people who are dealing with hair loss.
Right. And exactly. And the first phase I go through with people is the remove phase. I do the five phases, but the remove. And so it's not only removing toxins from your body and your GI tract, which you find through these labs, but it's removing those unhealthy relationships. It's removing, maybe it's your job that it's stressing you out, or removing, you know, not only what's going on in your body that's stressing it, but the outside in the environment, removing the mold, the toxic, what have you, in your house or in your car. I mean, people overlook that and you can't get them better. Oh, and another thing we're talking about, I think in the green room, removing those mercury fillings, because I can't detox someone very well when they're still in there. And those are so toxic, and it's just hard to go through the whole process. It's going to play a role in your stress and your body and your hair health.
Yeah, absolutely. Julie, I know you have a summit coming up. Tell us about the summit and maybe mention a few of the speakers and what they're talking about.
Okay. Well, it's called Healthy Body, Healthy Hair, The Truth About Hair Loss. And I have speakers, Dr. Tom O'Brien. I have talking about autoimmune and gluten. And we talked about the H. pylori. Anyway, gut health, Evan Brand, Dr. Peter Kahn, Dr. Amy Apigian. We've got Dr. Amy Horniman and Dr. Eric Ozonski. They talk about hormones. We talk about mast cell activation. People don't realize that is a huge cause of hair loss. It's an unknown cause. There's something for everybody in the summit, because again, there's so many causes of hair loss, and there's a lot of great resources. You have a great download, and there's a lot of great host gifts and educational materials. My action package has four modules, and one of them's on stress.
Awesome. And when is that being launched?
It's June 12th through the 18th. And then the encore weekend is June 24th and 25th.
To everyone listen, and also let's mention to everyone listening, this summit is free access, right? So when it launches on the 12th, people get access to all of these talks from all of these speakers for free for a period of 5 days or 7 days or something like that.
Right. And you can put in your show notes the registration links, because when they register, they also get access to some of these free host gifts and other gifts such as yours.
Okay. Awesome. Julie, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure. And thank you for educating everyone on the underlying drivers of hair loss and how it can be prevented or treated or reversed. I appreciate it. And best of luck with your upcoming summit.
Thank you so much, Ari. I appreciate having me.
Hey there, this is Ari again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, if you found it valuable, please share it with your friends, share it with your family. Help me get the word out there. Also, if you're on YouTube, make sure to hit the subscribe button and hit that little bell to get notifications every time we release a new video or new episode of the podcast. And if you're listening to this, make sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or on your favorite podcast. Thanks so much for supporting my work at the Energy Blueprint. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I will see you in the next.